This talk is going to be quite a short one. I gave it to camera on Thursday, just in case I was not well enough to give the talk this evening, and it came out at 36 minutes, and I'm going to try and shave 6 minutes off, so it's only 30 minutes, because I know that evening talks are quite difficult to stay with. It could be quite a long evening with a long talk and a puja as well, so I'll try and keep it quite short. I think the best way to describe the difference between the Buddha I spoke about this morning, the human historical Buddha trying to get close to his humanity, and the kind of Buddha or the dimension of the Buddha I'm going to speak about this evening. The best way to sort of compare those two is by, first of all, I'll just read you the beginning of a Pali Sutra, and I'm just going to open this book at random. No, that doesn't have the beginning of a sutta in. Here we are. Thus have I heard. Once the Exalted One was staying near Rajagaha in Great Grove, at the squirrel's feeding ground. On that occasion, the Venerable Vakali was staying in the potter's shed, being sick. Oh, two themes from this morning at random here. Afflicted, stricken with a sore disease, and it goes on like that. So that's how that one begins. Let's just take another one. Once the Exalted One was staying near Vaishali at Great Grove in the house with the peat's gable. Then, and the story begins. So that's how the Pali Suttas begin. They're very, very simple. And what I want to do now is read you the beginning of the Vimalakirti Nidesha, which is a Mahayana text. Reverence to the all Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, Aryashravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas in the past, the present and the future. Thus have I heard at one time, the Lord Buddha was in residence in the garden of Ambapali in the city of Vaishali, attended by a great gathering. Of bhikshus there were 8,000, all saints. They were free from impurities and afflictions. And had attained self-mastery. And it describes then for a short paragraph. Then it goes on. Of bodhisattvas, there were 32,000 great spiritual heroes who were universally acclaimed. Then it describes those bodhisattvas over many paragraphs, a couple of pages, it looks like. It goes on and on and on. Yep, and it mentions many of them by name. There's a whole paragraph of names. Then, there were also gathered there 10,000 Brahmas, gods. At their head, Brahma Sikkhin, who had come from the Ashoka universe with its four sectors to see, venerate and serve the Buddha and hear the Dharma from his own mouth. There were 12,000 Shakras, etc., etc. That goes on for a longish paragraph. Then, the Lord Buddha, thus surrounded and venerated by these multitudes of many hundreds of thousands of living beings, sat upon a majestic lion throne and began to teach the Dharma. Dominating all the multitudes, just as Sumeru, the king of mountains, looms high over the oceans, the Lord Buddha shone, radiated and glittered as he sat upon his magnificent lion throne. And then the action begins, like two pages later. So I wanted to read you that, partly to show the difference between the opening of a Pali Sutra and the opening of a Mahayana Sutra, but also just because I love that. I really love that section. I love that description of the Buddha on the lion throne, glittering and shining and just absolutely wonderful. So this talk is called The Buddha Beyond the Buddha. And this phrase comes from one of the papers that Subhuti wrote in conversation with Sangharakshita. And I can't remember which paper it was now, which were one of his seven papers, but it's in one of them. And it comes out of a discussion of the famous, again, Vishanka mentioned this last night, of the famous sutta called the Gaurava Sutta, where the Buddha soon after his enlightenment, looks around the whole universe for somebody he could revere. He wants to revere someone, and he's very disappointed to find that there's no one in the universe he can really look up to. And that's bad news for him. You know, he wants someone to look up to, so he decides to revere the Dharma instead. Now, the Buddha revering the Dharma is interesting because obviously it doesn't mean to say he's revering the formulations of the Dharma that he has formulated himself, like the Eightfold Path and the Four Noble Truths. He means something principial, the actual Dharma, the principial Dharma. He decides to revere that. So in this paper, Sangharakshita puts forward the idea that perhaps this is what the Pure Land Sutras are all about. The Pure Land Sutras are those Mahayana sutras that describe the Pure Land Sukhavati, with Amitabha at the centre of them all. And perhaps, he muses, the idea there is that what the authors of those sutras were trying to do would give content to the Buddha's revering of the Dharma. What is the Dharma that the Buddha reveres? Perhaps it's something like the Pure Land and Amitabha. So that's one of his ideas there. So it's time, I think, I told you about the Trikaya doctrine, the famous Trikaya doctrine, which is rather philosophical. This came from a school of Buddhism called the Yogacara school, and they were meditators, basically, that school. They really did a lot of meditation, and a lot of their ideas came from their meditation experience. And apparently about the 4th century Common Era, which is 8, 9, maybe 1,000 years after the time of the Buddha himself, they came up with this idea of the Trikaya doctrine. So tri means three, and kaya is body. So it's the doctrine of the three bodies of the Buddha, which you could say is three different ways of seeing the Buddha, depending on what kind of level you're at. And the first of these bodies, these kayas, is the nirmana kaya. And that's the nirmana kaya, which what I was talking about this morning. The nirmana kaya is the human historical Buddha, the Buddha who actually lived 2,500 years ago in India. Nirmana actually means transformation. And another possible title for this is the Rupa Kaya. Now, Rupa simply means form, physical form, the Buddha in his ordinary physical form. And you would think, well, why not call it the Rupa Kaya? Why Nirmana? Why the transformation body? Well, this is because not all of the early schools considered that the Buddha really was simply a human being like you and I. He was born, grew up, left home, sought out the Dharma, and eventually became enlightened, and then, well, not eventually, became enlightened, and then he taught for the rest of his life until he attained parinirvana. The Theravadins think that the Buddha was a human being, and so do some of the other schools. But some of those ancient schools considered that the Buddha was always transcendental, and that he only appeared to be born, he only appeared to grow up, he only appeared to leave home, and so on and so on. He only appeared to gain enlightenment at a certain time because he's eternally enlightened. So the Nirmana Kaya is the transformation body. It's that eternal Buddha transforming into an ordinary human body. One of my questions for you tomorrow is, what do you think of that as an idea? I'll let you talk about that tomorrow. I'm not going to say any more about that. The second of the kayas is the Sambhoga Kaya. And Sambhoga literally means enjoyment. And here the idea is, it's the Buddha that you see in your meditation when you're in jhana. And it's the Buddha that spontaneously appears in front of you, or almost in a dream. I was talking to someone today who has these amazing archetypal dreams, which I wish I had, but I hardly ever do, if ever. But it's the kind of the body of the Buddha that appears to you as not like a human figure, but like really gold, and like the description I just read to you from the Vimalakirti Nidesha, glittering on this massive lion throne, and so on. So that's the Sambhoga, and it's called the enjoyment because you'll experience the Buddha in that way, and it'll be really pleasurable, it'll be really blissful. You could say it's the blissful body of the Buddha. So that's that one. And then the third one is the Dharmakaya. And Dharma, you know the meaning of the word Dharma, but Dharmakaya is the Buddha, is the kind of principial Buddhahood, in a way, that you can't see and you can't feel and you can't hear. It's the kind of the Buddha behind all the formations of the Buddha. So those are that's the Trikaya doctrine. And it's a very, very useful way of understanding the Buddha. So this morning we were exploring the Rupakaya, the Nimanakaya, and this evening we'll really be exploring the Sambhogakaya, the body of the Buddha of the body of bliss. It's interesting that one scholar, I think it's Rupert Gethin, I got this from Nagapriya's wonderful book on the Mahayana, called Visions of Mahayana, which is a really, really great book. I highly recommend that book. Unfortunately, it doesn't sell very well, but I just don't understand why not, because it's such a good book. It's really, really stimulating. But I had a quick look in there, and he quotes, I think it's Rupert Gethin, as saying that one way of understanding the Trikaya doctrine is that the first one, the Nimanakaya, is the Buddha on earth. The second one, the Sambhogakaya, is the Buddha in heaven. In heaven, in the Buddhist sense of, as you only see that Buddha when you're in jhana. To be in jhana is to be in heaven. It's the subjective counterpart of the heavenly realms. And the third one, the Buddha of the Dharmakaya, is the Buddha of eternity. Not again, as I was talking about this morning, not eternity in the sense of the Buddha living forever and ever and ever, but in the sense of being outside of time, the Buddha outside of time. So that's the Trikaya doctrine. It's very useful idea, actually, but it's not really an idea, remember, because it comes from the Yogacharans, who were great meditators, so I think it more comes from their actual experience than some philosophical idea that they cooked up in a very intellectual kind of way. And most of us who are involved in Sri Ratna, we're really, really familiar with the idea of the Sambhogakaya Buddha, and probably one of the most used, one of the most familiar symbols in our movement is the Five Buddha Mandala. Which I'll just talk about very briefly, but if you've done level 2 Buddhism, you may have come across the Five Buddha Mandala. The five Buddhas are all of them Buddhas of the Sambhogakaya. They're Sambhogakaya Buddhas, which you don't see in ordinary life. So I'll just describe those to you. Actually, the Five Buddha Mandala comes quite late in Buddhist history. It comes with the Vajrayana. In Vajrayana, everything's in fives, and in Mahayana, everything's in threes, which we'll see a bit later on in the talk. But there were three Buddhas in the Mahayana, but that became five Buddhas in the Vajrayana. So in the Five Buddha Mandala, right at the center of the mandala, you've got the pure white Buddha of Virochana. Virochana means the illuminator. He illuminates the whole universe. And each one of these Buddhas doesn't only have a color, they also have a mudra, a gesture, and his gesture is teaching the Dharma, the Dharma Chakra of Pavatana mudra, rolling the wheel of the Dharma. And he has a time of, well, they all have a time of day except for Virochana, and he's omnipresent. So that's Virochana. And then usually in Buddhist mythology, you approach the mandala from the east, because the east is when the sun comes up. So approaching the mandala from the east, the Buddha in the eastern quarter is Akshobhya. And he's deep blue in colour, the colour of the sky at dawn, I suppose. And he's associated with early morning. And then going round to the southern end of the mandala, you've got Ratnasambhava, who's a brilliant golden yellow, and he's the sun, the colour of the sun at midday. Ratnasambhava meaning the jewel-born one, and he's the Buddha of abundance, riches and abundance. In going round, then you've got the Buddha of the West, who is Amitabha, and he's deep red in colour, the colour of the sun setting in the West. And I'm not telling you everything here, but his mudra is the meditation mudra, the Dhyana mudra, and the idea here is he's associated with the evening time when it's time to stop working and just start meditating. And then finally you've got the Buddha of Midnight, really, who is Amoghasiddhi, unfailing success. That's what his name means, and he's deep green, dark green in colour. So that's the five Buddha mandala. I'm not going to say any more about that because I'm sure you've looked at it, or you will do at some point if you stick around Sri Ratna, you'll probably look into it in some detail. But I just wanted to mention that they're very, very popular figures in our culture, you could say, in our tradition, and they are all of them Sambhogakaya Buddhas. And you don't really get to know them as people. It's not like it's hard enough to get to know the historical Buddha as a person, but you don't really get to know these Buddhas as people, unless of course they spontaneously arise in your meditation or in a dream and start speaking to you, as does happen to some people. So that's the five Buddha mandala. And interestingly enough, you've got the five Buddha mandala, which, you know, you've got Amoghasiddhi at the top there. But then sometimes above them, you have Vajrasattva, who is like above them all. So Vajrasattva in that sense is a little bit like the Dharma Niyama Buddha, above the Sambhogakaya Niyama Buddha. Although, really, literally speaking, strictly speaking, you can't really depict the Dharma Niyama because it's beyond all concepts. So, I mentioned earlier the Banti's paper where he talks about this idea of the Buddha beyond the Buddha. I should say actually that I've slightly shortened that because Banti is always very careful in his speech, and he said the Buddha beyond, as it were, the Buddha. The Buddha beyond, as it were, the Buddha. And I've just shortened that to the Buddha beyond the Buddha. And I've mentioned that Banti thinks that's associated with the Pure Land sutras. And I just want to finish. Am I going to finish with this bit? Not quite finished. Penultimately, I'm going to talk about the Pure Land Sutras, which, as many of you know, I've done a quite thorough, detailed and in some depth study of the three Pure Land Sutras. And at the centre of it all is Amitabha, the Buddha Amitabha, who's not red in those sutras, actually. He's golden. All Buddhas in Mahayana sutras are golden. Gold being the colour of the transcendental. It's because in India in those days it was the most precious metal, gold. So all Buddhas in Mahayana sutras are golden in colour, and Amitabha in the sutras is golden in colour. And he's kind of at the centre of it all, but you don't really get to know him as a figure. He's said to be constantly teaching the Dharma. You don't hear any of the words he speaks as the Dharma. He's more like the silent Buddha who's supposed to be teaching the Dharma, but actually he doesn't seem to. In all three sutras, and two of them are really long, extended sutras, the Buddha only speaks once, and it's just to talk about a vow he made in the past, the vow to create Sukhavati, but he doesn't actually give any Dharma teachings. The teachings don't come from him. They come from Sukhavati, the land that he created, and they come from the birds in that land, and the rivers in that land, and the trees, and the bells in the trees in that land. That's where the Dharma all comes from, those, the spoken Dharma. But Amitabha doesn't say anything, really. He's just silently in the middle of it all. So he's a very enigmatic figure. He's actually absolutely central to the whole mythology and the legend of Sukhavati, but he's silent all the way through, and he doesn't really interact with you at all. He doesn't interact with anybody in the Pure Land. He's just there. So he's very much like a principle. And one Pure Land scholar, Kenneth Tanaka, in a book called The Dawn of Chinese Pure Land Buddhist Doctrine, says something very interesting. He says, under this view, the Buddhist cosmos is not an objective, a material, but a subjective and spiritual reality. Yeah, I'll just read that again. Under this view, the Buddhist cosmos is not an objective and material, but a subjective and spiritual reality. The transcendent Buddhas, that's the transcendent Buddhas is Keith Tanaka's way of talking about the Buddha beyond the Buddha, the archetypal Buddha, the Sambhogakaya Buddha. The transcendent Buddhas and their realms that fill the universe are concretized expressions of the eternal Buddha principle, Dharma. So they're concretized expressions of the eternal Buddha principle, which, as the basic reality of the universe, is ever active to lead all beings to enlightenment. In other words, the universe is ever active to lead... In other words, the universe is the domain of the Buddhas and is thus fashioned and sustained by their work to lead beings to enlightenment. So there's quite a fascinating way of understanding the universe that we're in, especially nowadays in our very scientific understanding of the universe. What Tanaka is saying is, no, that's not it at all. It's actually, everything's really subjective, and it's all the domain of the Buddhas. We're living in a Buddha universe. Of course, that doesn't really go along with the modern scientific understanding, but that doesn't really matter. Doesn't matter to me anyway. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to read you a couple of sections from one of those sutras. It's a sutra called, sometimes people call it the Amitāya Dhyāna Sutra, but I prefer it to call it its Chinese name, because it seems that it was written in Chinese, in China, in Chinese rather than Sanskrit. So I'm going to give it its abbreviated Chinese name, which is the Guan Jing. Guan meaning to look, to see, to visualize, and also to have insight. It means all of those things, Guan. And Jing means work or sutra. Yeah, so it's the, often it's translated, the abbreviated title is translated as the Contemplation Sutra, or the Visualization Sutra, or sometimes even the Meditation Sutra. And it all begins with a terrible story of the good king, the good disciple of the Buddha, Bimbisara, being imprisoned by his son, Ajatasattru, who wants to take over the throne. And not only has he thrown his father into a dungeon, he's also starving him to death, so that he, when Bimbisara dies, Ajatasattru will become the king. And the main hero or heroine of the story is Ajatasattru's concubine, the queen Vaidehi, who visits him every day in his dungeon and gives him something to eat, just a little something to eat, and that keeps him going. But when Ajatasattru finds out that that's what Vaidehi's been doing, he's really angry and he draws his sword to kill her. But his ministers dissuade him from doing that. And instead, he throws her into a dungeon. So now they both had it, both of them. You know, they're in the depths of the dungeon, and they're also in the depths of despair. There's nothing anyone can do for them now. So Vaidehi, we're going to meet Vaidehi at this point. The imprisoned Vaidehi, emaciated with worry, turns to face Vulture's Peak. That's where the Buddha was at that point. Bowed to the Buddha and said, "The Blessed One, the Tathagata, used to send Ananda to comfort me. Now I am filled with anxiety and unease. As I am not able to gaze upon the face of the Blessed One, it is my heartfelt desire that the Venerable Modgalyayana and Ananda come to me here." Her tears fell like rain. She turned towards the far-off Buddha, bowed down in reverence, and lay there unmoving. On Vulture's Peak, the Blessed One understood Vaidehi's wish. He asked Maha Modgalyayana, as well as Ananda, to fly to her through the air. the Buddha himself vanished from Vulture's Peak and appeared in the royal palace. That is to say, in Vaidehi's dungeon. So we're not in the realm of a historical Buddha here. We're in the realm of magic. We're in the realm of the Sambhogakaya Buddha. Vaidehi's, she's on the floor. And one of my ideas after I wrote the book, I was going through it again, and I thought, oh, she's probably exhausted. She's probably absolutely exhausted with fear and anxiety and grief and betrayal. She's probably at the end of her tether. She's probably fallen down asleep on the dungeon floor. And perhaps the rest of the sutra is a dream sutra. It's a kind of dream yoga. Maybe what happens now is the Buddha appears to her in a dream. That's a possibility, I think. It doesn't say that, but I think that's maybe what's happening. When Vaidehi raised her head, she saw the Blessed One, the Buddha Shakyamuni. His body was the colour of pure gold, and he was seated on a lotus flower made of 100 different kinds of precious substances. Modgalyayana stood to his left and Ananda to his right. Chakra, Brahma, the protectors of the world, and all the other gods surrounded him in the air, showering him with heavenly flowers. So that's the vision that is afforded to Vaidehi. She sees the Buddha in the air in her dungeon, golden, on a lotus flower made of the 100 precious substances, with two of his chief disciples, one to either side. There's the Trinity again, the trio. And with gods showering flowers on them. So she saw this in her dungeon. And the rest of the sutra is that Buddha, Shakyamuni, the Sambhogakaya, teaching her how to visualize Amitabha's Pure Land. So that's what the sutra is all about, really. Anyway, halfway through this teaching, this happens. He's teaching, and then the text says, as he spoke these words, the Buddha Amitayus being another word for Amitabha, appeared in the air above him, above the Buddha, with the two great beings, Avalokiteshvara and Mahasthamaprapta, on either side. They were blazing with light, so brilliant that it was impossible to see them properly. Even the radiance of gold from the Jambu River, multiplied 100,000 times, could not compare with it. So now you've got vision upon vision. You've got this visionary Buddha floating in the air in her dungeon, teaching Vaidehi how to visualize Sukhavati. And halfway through this, you get Amitabha suddenly appearing above Shakyamuni with his two great disciples, but they're all so bright that I can't really see them. They're above the Buddha. And this seems to me to be a pictorial, imaginal way of talking about the different levels of Buddhahood. This really is the Buddha beyond the Buddha. In fact, the Buddha Shakyamuni, as he appears in Vaidehi's dungeon, is already the Buddha beyond the historical Buddha. And now we've got Amitabha, who's in some sense the Buddha beyond that Buddha. You could go on infinitely, I suppose. So that's the vision. And then the rest of the sutra, Shakyamuni carries on teaching, and all the time Amitabha is above him like that. So this is a wonderful, for me, it's just an amazing imaginative exposition, of the levels of Buddhahood. Just really quite wonderful. But time is getting on, and I promised this would not be a long talk, so I'm going to finish with a sutra which is fairly well known to us in the movement. It's one of the three Mahayana sutras that Sangharakshita has really introduced us to by giving series of lectures on them. This is the Sutra of Golden Light. The Sutra of Golden Light, and the Buddha in that sutra is gold, and he emanates light. And I'm just going to read you a couple of sections from the end of that sutra, and then we'll finish. Lord of sages, you are gloriously adorned with thousands of enchanting virtues. You possess the marks of hundreds of merits. With your sumptuous complexion, you appear supremely serene as 1,000 suns shining forth with dazzling light. Blazing with myriad rays, you are engulfed with light. Resplendent with colour, like jewels of blue and white, gold, lapis, copper, and dawn crystal light, you illuminate tens of millions of worlds and soothe their fierce suffering. You satisfy beings with supreme peace. Your complexion and six sense powers are bright and beautiful to behold. Your form is a joy for beings to constantly see. Enchantingly beautiful, your hair, the colour of a peacock, shines as a lotus filled with bees. I'm going to read that bit again. Enchantingly beautiful, your hair, the colour of a peacock, shines as a lotus filled with bees. Gloriously radiant like a fire's glowing light, you resemble the full solar orb in the sky. Endowed with all virtue, as is Mount Sumeru, you are magnanimous in every world sphere. Homage to the Buddha, who is possessed of an utterly immaculate mind and presides over an utterly flawless Dharma. Perfectly knowing existence and non-existence, his sublime mind is freed from evil karma's paths. How amazing! The Buddha's splendour is boundless. How amazing! It is like the ocean and Mount Sumeru. How amazing! The Buddha's field of activity is endless. How amazingly compassionate is the Tathagata, the pinnacle of the Shakya kings, a son among lords of men, that he has expounded such a sublime sutra as this in order to nurture and guide all beings. With his senses serene, the Tathagata Shakyamuni has entered the city of peace most sublime. So profound, calm, and pure is your concentration. You abide in the victorious Buddha's domain of experience. In this way, the bodies of Shravakas, that is, Shravakas are disciples, the bodies of Shravakas are empty. The most sublime of humans dwells in emptiness too. All of these phenomena are empty by nature. Those lacking empty nature are not found at all. Constantly planting my knees on the ground, in sorrowful thirst, I long for the conqueror. In a pitiful voice, I sob for the leader. Deeply thirsty for the Sugata's sight, I remain. As I incessantly blaze with anxiety's fire, bestow upon me the cooling water of your sight. Thus, the bodies of Shravakas are empty. All beings by nature are like in a dream, like space and the nature of space, an illusion, a mirage or the moon reflected in water. O Buddha, you are endowed with the great empty.